Live from beyond the Beltway, this is Bruce Dumont with our weekly analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Mike Miller, economist for Western Washington University, Republican strategist Kathy Barnett from the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and Republican attorney Judith Sherwin. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at AM 560. That's the Salem Station just outside Chicago, literally a stone's throw just off the expressway. Nice to have you with us this evening. And again, if you want to send us a note or give us a call, it's 1-800-723-8289. 1-800-723-8289. And tonight there's a great challenge, because as you know, if you're a regular listener to the program, we always try to present a balanced discussion of politics. Sometimes people don't like it. They'd rather have me be, you know, on one side of the political equation than the other. But again, for 44 years, I've tried to have Republicans and Democrats, independents, all part of the mix that we present to you each week on this program. But today, our Democrat, our card-carrying Democrat, who was to be here this evening, Jim Morrissey, sent me a text earlier this morning saying that he can't make it tonight. And I've spent most of the afternoon reaching out to a variety of Democrats who have been on this program, and for a variety of reasons, they've not been able to join us tonight. So we do the program this evening with no card-carrying Democrat. But I am sure we have card-carrying Democrats that are listening out there in radio and TV land. So, again, this is a great challenge to you. If you want to keep the show fair and balanced tonight, you got to give us a call, 1-800-723-8289. And we've got great guests. Joining us in studio is Judith Sherwin. She's been here frequently. Mike Miller joins us the first Sunday of every month from Western Washington University. And we also welcome a new guest this evening. She is Kathy Barnett. She joins us from Pennsylvania. She was a Republican Senate candidate a few years ago, and she was the grassroots director of Vivek Ramaswamy's presidential campaign. She's an author involved in a variety of things, has her own Kathy Barnett podcast, but she joins us on Beyond the Beltway this evening. So, Kathy, thank you very much for joining us. I'd like to begin. Obviously, the big story of this week is the conviction on 34 accounts by Donald Trump. And to you, Kathy, I want to start. As you look forward, did this verdict change, or did it surprise you in any way? And what advice would you give to the Trump campaign in moving forward to get this behind them, if indeed they want it behind them?
Yeah, listen, this particular case, it achieved the results that Democrats wanted. They're all about the optics, and the optics was for them was to embrazen on Donald Trump's forehead convicted felon. So between now and November, this is what they're going to pound in the sand, is they're going to mention his name, President Donald Trump, comma, convicted felon, comma, and then they're going to spew whatever lie it is that they want to have. Right. Mm-hmm. For people like myself and those as the guest that you have on here, this does not change our opinion. It certainly doesn't change my opinion on who I'm voting for come November. I was the national grassroots director for the Vivek Ramaswamy presidential campaign. But once Vivek terminated his campaign, we all pivoted and we knew exactly what we were going to do. That is to do our part to make sure Donald Trump wins in November. However, I think this is going to be very crucial for, you know, I was reading Guy Benson. I believe he's at Daily Caller. I'm not sure.
Yep.
But he put out a really good article this morning saying that even he is a known never Trumper. He has never voted for Donald Trump and has never had any niceties to say about him. And yet he says this is the first time he is considering voting for Donald Trump, because it's a difference between the devil you know, who is Joe Biden, versus the devil of your imagination, i.e. Donald Trump. The devil we know.
Yeah. I want to ask Judith Sherwin. She's an attorney. She sits right across from me tonight. Judith, is there some potential benefit to be identified as a convicted felon? I mean, how many convicted felons are out there? Do they represent a voting bloc that no one has ever
that we never knew about.
That no one has ever considered before.
Well, considering that some of them can't even vote, I don't know that they're a voting bloc. However, and by the way, Donald Trump is going to be able to vote because Florida's law is quite different, and Ron DeSantis actually made an announcement about that. The situation with Donald Trump. So is this going to change anything? I think it's going to change a lot of things. In the, what is it now, 48 hours, 72 hours since this verdict came down, the Trump campaign has gotten 53, at last time I saw, maybe more now, $53 million, okay? It's unbelievable, and is mostly in small donations. And according to them, a huge percentage, over 50%, are people never donated to him before. So I think a lot of people who were not sitting on the fence, people who were saying, oh, you know, I don't like his personality. I think he's a jerk. I don't like him, blah, 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 blah. They are so freaked out over what has happened in New York. I mean, this is fascism, plain and simple. This is a Soviet show trial, and they're not going to put up with it. And the people are saying, I wish I had a nickel for everybody who said, now I'm going to crawl over broken glass to vote for Donald Trump. I hope Guy Benson is one of them.
Mike Miller joins us from Western Washington University, which is pretty far left in this country. What is the reaction to your friends and neighbors? I think I probably know what it is, Mike, but what would you add to whether or not this is a big plus for Donald Trump?
I think it's going to Trump will turn it into a plus. He's amazing at that. And I do endorse Kathy's idea of reading that piece by Guy Benson. You can get it on townhall.com. It is an excellent piece, which is very methodical in how it lays out the situation. I think it's a very sad day. A travesty has just happened within the American legal system. And I just don't understand how anyone on the left can endorse what has happened here. No matter how far you went, you could never think that the judge would do more that was incorrect, and then he would do something else, and then he would do something else. Right. And in the end, he essentially said that you can find him guilty of a felony without him having been able to defend himself against it. And on top of that, even if you're not unanimous, this was just such a profoundly un-American, I don't know if I want to use the word fascist, but such an un-American outcome.
I want to ask, we're about to go to a break, but the question I'm going to ask now, I'll let everybody tackle it afterwards. The president has said the jury has spoken. Bragg said the jury has spoken. You're an officer of the court, Judith Sherwin. Mm-hmm. Should we give some time to reflect and respect that the jury, now again, there may be a lot of questions about the judge, but the jury in this case, they sat through tons and tons of testimony, and these, 12 men and women from New York, they came to the conclusion that Donald Trump was guilty. I want to get reaction, as an attorney, I want to get reaction to what extent should we respect the verdict of this jury. I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly from Chicago.
Kids want to share what's going on in their lives with the adults around them. Parents, grandparents, teachers, coaches, and more. They want to know you're listening, and they want to listen to you. They want your input and guidance, early and often, on all kinds of topics. When it comes to a serious subject like underage drinking, they want to know your expectations, as well as how and why, as a young person, they should avoid alcohol. How you talk about it will change as your child grows. But the important thing is to talk about it. Not just once for an hour when you think the time is right, but in 60 one-minute conversations and more that are part of your everyday talks. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. When you need me, I'll be by your side.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Dr. Nia Hurd-Garris with today's tip for kids from the American Academy of Pediatrics. As parents, we want our children to grow up healthy and strong. That means helping teens take responsibility for their health as they become young adults. One way to do that is to make sure they have one-on-one time with their pediatrician. That helps them become comfortable talking about any health issue with their doctors and with you. So make sure to give your teen a voice. It's good for their health. For more on teen health, visit healthychildren.org.
I think it's just vapor.
Vaping is safer than smoking, isn't it?
There's really not even that much nicotine in them, right?
One vape pod has as much nicotine as one pack of cigarettes.
My kid knows it's dangerous.
5.4 million American kids vape, and most think it's harmless. Get your head out of the cloud. Talk to your kid about vaping. Visit talkaboutvaping.org. That's talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Bruce, we went back, and before the break, I asked everyone to what extent should we as citizens, should we respect the verdict of the jury? We may not like the judge, but should we respect the verdict of the jury? And I asked Judith Sherwin to respond to that as an officer of the court.
So as an officer of the court, juries are interesting things, okay? They're subject to the prejudices of the rest of us. This particular jury, there was a lot of scuttlebutt during the trial from the media who were in the court that the prosecutor was losing the jury. I think you could see from the instructions and the questions that the prosecutor lost a very large portion of the jury. And the judge and his instructions, basically the way he answered them was, I want you to find him guilty of a felony, and I don't much care what the crime you think he committed was.
Okay.
You don't have to agree. That is not a valid jury instruction. Okay. That alone is reversible error.
That goes back to the judge again. But I want to go to Kathy. Kathy, what is your sense about what the president had to say? And you know, we should respect the jury because we were there. We were sitting, or the jury was sitting there through all of this.
Yeah.
And we were all reacting to media narratives. In fact, I think 2 weeks ago in this program, I thought that Donald Trump was going to beat it because there were a couple of days of media coverage, even on CNN. Thought they were saying that the prosecution was screwing it up.
No, listen, the books were cooked even before it went to trial. I'm going to say my answer very short and then I explain it. But listen, should we respect the jury's verdict? Absolutely not. Here we're sitting with these people have conjured up a multi-count felony conviction, potentially carrying hundreds of years of sentencing for what? For a victimless bookkeeping error. So we should not expect these people to have restraint when it comes to sentencing. And we should absolutely not respect the whole process. The process has been a sham. I'm going to say something that's going to be very uncomfortable for most of you Republicans who love to clutch your pearls right about now. But I'm going to suggest that we take Maxine Waters' advice. But in reverse, wherever we see these people, we need to get a backbone and start pushing back. These people are not playing with us. They have shown absolutely no restraint. They do not care about the Constitution. They do not care about what you think about them. They will destroy this country before they hand it back over, not just to somebody like Donald Trump, but what Donald Trump represents. And that is the will of the people who are tired of these elites running our nation into the ground.
That's but again, my question to you is, the elites, are the elites those 12 men and women on the
All
jury?
All right, well, let me answer something about
well,
that.
Well, let's let Kathy respond, and then I want to have you respond. Okay. But I want to hear everybody respond to that. You've just basically, you know, castigated the elites. But
administrative system here in our country. It's a deep state administrative. These are people we did not elect. They did not have to go through the vetting process as far as we electing them to run our country. And yet they are here. Vivek talked about them all the time. The deep state, we call them, the administrative. These
but Kathy, are those members of the jury? Judith, I want to get your response.
Yeah, please. Judith. I agree with you. I agree with everything you're saying. And you said it very eloquently. Here's the thing. This is Manhattan. Manhattan doesn't even like the other boroughs of New York. You could have tried this case anywhere else in the world, and you would not have gotten a guilty verdict. Anywhere. Maybe even in California. This is absolutely a travesty what took place in that courtroom. You know why Donald Trump was convicted? He was convicted because he won the 2016 election. Colangelo said that in his opening statement. He said he conspired to win the 2016 election. They will never forgive him for that. And let me finish. As far as they're concerned, he is a felon because he took Hillary Clinton's turn away from her.
All right. That's your point. I want to go to Mike because I don't want to lose track of this the castigation that we've had thus far of the jury.
Well, it's not funny.
No, it isn't funny. I'm talking about, I want Mike to respond to that because Kathy was suggesting that they are part of the deep state. Now the administration of justice may be part of that. Alvin Bragg may be part of that. The judge may be part of that. But in this particular, my case was specifically talking about the jury. I want Mike Miller to react to my comment and questions about the jury. Go ahead, Mike.
No. I do not blame the jury for several reasons. One is that they were not given all of the information, but I'm going to go back because of the judge.
Yeah.
Okay.
If they really did not listen to the news the way they're not supposed to listen to the news, they don't know all the things that we know. What they saw was one of the defense people testifying gave the judge the stink eye, and he cleared the room and castigated and says, I'm not going to let your stuff go through if you do this again to me. That's unheard of. Alan Dershowitz said, I could not believe what I saw before me. He did not allow someone to come and say there was no FEC violation. He wouldn't let the guy testify to this. All of us on here are political junkies. We know that that's the case. The average American does not know that that's the case.
All right, let's bring on
Stormy Daniels.
One at a time, folks.
I want to say one thing as a lawyer.
Go ahead. Judith and then Kathy. Judith and then Kathy. Go ahead.
You know, the most atrocious thing about that jury is there were two lawyers on that jury.
Yeah.
They both should be disbarred. They know, they know how a trial is supposed to be conducted, even if they are not litigators. This was an absolute travesty. They kept out relevant evidence. They didn't allow people to testify. And who do they have testifying? That, you'll excuse me, whore, okay, who Donald Trump has won a lawsuit against. She owes him $300,000 because she lied about sleeping with him. Now, look, they never got to see that. That's because of the judge. That's because of the corruption of the New York, and I'll use this word loosely, justice system.
Okay.
I am embarrassed to be an officer of the court.
Okay, Judith, you have made Kathy, to you, we're gonna wrap this segment up very soon because, go ahead.
The question you asked was whether or not we should respect the verdict, and I am saying no.
And I agree.
I understand all the things that came along with it, how we got to that point. We need to stop clutching our pearls, stop trying to follow the rules of law when no one is following the rules of law. I think we need to look at mutual destruction here, because Democrats feel as though they can do whatever it is they want to do. And we're just going to sit back and say, oh, well, it, you know, the judge says so, the jury did it, when we know from beginning to end this was a show trial. Okay. Not, I mean, it was unprecedented.
We have a caller on the line, Carl, listening to us in Chicago. Go ahead, you're on the air, Carl.
Hi, Bruce.
Hi.
Hi. I'm kind of thinking that I think Trump will not go to jail. I don't know, because he's going through an immediate appeal and so forth. And I'm, if worst case scenario, I hope he'll go to the U.S. Supreme Court to rectify this matter. And also, I'm hoping that somebody in Congress, like Jim Jordan, will go after Alvin Bragg and, you know, Letitia James and all the people that, you know, try to pick on Trump, you know, that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm. I want to go to Judith, because she's an attorney. Good question, Judith. How speedy will this process of appeal be? How long does it normally last?
Well, first of all, the sentencing doesn't even happen until July 11th, I think. So you can't appeal until that happens.
Okay.
Okay, that's number one. Number two, at the sentencing, God knows what's going to happen. There's a variety of things this asshole can do. Excuse me. I'm sorry to say it on the air. But I.
Me too.
I'm sorry. He can fine him. He can put him on house arrest. That would be nice. That's what they want. They don't want him to campaign. He can try to throw him in jail, which is going to be a major problem, because you have to throw the Secret Service in jail with him. He can do a variety of very unpleasant things. He can fine him. Okay. That'll be fun. Then he's going to have to put up another big bond out of his own money. There's a number of things that they can do. But
can the appeal happen before Election Day? That's what I want to know from you.
The only way it could happen, Kathy, go ahead. Is if it's you asked a legal question,
Kathy,
can I answer?
I'm going to Kathy. You're out of order. Go ahead, Kathy.
It absolutely will not happen. Everyone knows it. They know that this is going to eventually one day over the rainbow going to be overturned. The point is, between now and November, Donald Trump will be a convicted felon. Every time they mention his name, they will pound that into the sand. One of the things we need to do is wake up from our slumber. We have been trained in this country to wait for the Hollywood movie ending. It's not gonna happen. There is no political messiah and Jim Jordan or anybody else who's gonna come down and rescue us. And unfortunately, the GOP is not doing a whole lot across the nation. I'm here in Pennsylvania, and we have yet to open up a Trump campaign office. It's crickets here on the ground. So the only ones who's going to save us is going to be the grassroots rising up and doing the job.
Okay. We've got a pause. When we come back, we'll hear from everybody. Again, in case you've just tuned in, my Democrat guest today, he canceled earlier today, so we have no card-carrying Democrat. So the Republicans are going at it, and we'll continue with their commentary in just a moment.
This is Carol Platt Liebau for townhall.com. It was an embarrassing weekend for Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg. On Face the Nation, he was confronted with some damning facts. Despite having received $7.5 billion for electric vehicle charging, the Federal Highway Administration has only produced a grand total of 7, maybe 8, EV chargers in 3 years. That's a far cry from the 50,000 per year necessary to reach the administration's goal of 500,000 chargers by 2030. The waste is particularly galling given Americans' declining interest in buying electric cars. According to an April Gallup poll, only 9% are even seriously considering purchasing an EV. Secretary Buttigieg claims that everything is on track and just fine. Perhaps that's true for those on the receiving end of $7.5 billion of taxpayer largesse. For the rest of us, this looks like nothing more than another government green grift.
I think it's just vapor.
Vaping is safer than smoking, isn't it?
There's really not even that much nicotine in them, right?
One vape pod has as much nicotine as one pack of cigarettes.
My kid knows it's dangerous.
5.4 million American kids vape, and most think it's harmless. Get your head out of the cloud. Talk to your kid about vaping. Visit talkaboutvaping.org. That's talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Matthew.
Sorry.
It's okay. I just need you to listen to me.
I know that a lot of times, Mom, it might not seem like I'm listening to you, but I am. I hear you. And what you say really does matter to me.
I mean, let's be honest. No kid likes rules, but I get why we have them. I hear you, and I know it's because you care.
All the talks we've had over the years, including what you've told me about not using alcohol and other drugs, they stick with me. And believe it or not, they really do make a difference, especially at times that matter most.
Hey, want a drink?
No, thanks, I'm good. So thank you, Dad, for talking and preparing me for what's ahead.
Thanks, Mom, for never giving up and always being my biggest fan.
Thank you for letting me know what you expect, so I can try to meet your expectations.
Thank you for talking.
For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Let's be honest. The National Symphony may not be in his future, but he wanted to try violin. So you said yes because you love him. And if you love him that much, love him enough to make sure he's buckled up and in the back seat. Find out more about keeping your kids safe in your vehicle at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Show them you love them. Keep them safe. Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Bruce Dumont back on Beyond the Beltway. Thanks very much for joining us. And we let each guest now take a moment to introduce themselves. And we're going to begin with Mike Miller way out there in Western Washington. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, thank you, Bruce, for the invitation to be on the show. I have been an economist since I got my PhD at the University of Pittsburgh in 1980. I spent 43 years at DePaul in University in Chicago. And then I moved out to Washington State to retire, and I unretired when I got an offer from Western Washington to teach macroeconomics, and they've re-upped me for next year. So I'm having a wonderful time being unretired.
Kathy Barnett joins us from the great Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Tell us about yourself, Kathy.
Yes, this is such a hard question. I did not know I was going to give my resume on air. However, when someone asks you, tell me about yourself, it's like which part of my life? I feel as though I've lived multiple lives. Grew up on a pig farm, Southern Alabama, grew up in dire poverty, but by the grace of God, was able to pull myself out from up underneath the rock and create a wonderful life for me and my family. Worked in the Wall Street environment with a buy side and sell side company, went on to be in corporate America, adjunct professor of corporate finance. Ran a very competitive race here in Pennsylvania in 2022 against Dr. Oz, authored my first book that went number one on Amazon, and became the National Grassroots Director for the Vivek Ramaswamy campaign. Lastly, I am the host of the Kathy Barnett Show. I have all of these conversations with people like Vivek and various other people on the podcast where we talk about these issues, and let's just keep it real.
Do you believe, Judith Sherwin, let's take a biographical stroll down memory lane with Judith.
Thank you. So Bruce and I have known each other for far too long. He knows me from the days when I used to be a liberal. I could probably make the other side of this argument if I had to, but I don't want to.
You were a McGovern liberal.
Yeah.
Oh,
McCarthy. You were more McCarthy.
More McCarthy. Okay, I was stuck with McGovern at the end of the process. I cleaned for Gene, we'll put it that way. In any event, I teach at Loyola University in the law school as an adjunct professor, and I practice law as a litigator, so I'm quite familiar with what trials are supposed to look like, and what we saw in New York was not a trial.
Okay. Kathy, back to you. Well, one of the other narratives, or certainly a media narrative over the last several months, is the interpretation of polls that suggests that African Americans are moving towards Donald Trump, specifically African American men. Give me your assessment of that narrative. Is it true, and how extensive is it?
It is true. It is something that I saw in 2022 when I ran my own, although I was running in a Republican primary. I spent a lot of time in various corners of Pennsylvania talking to a lot of people, many of them Black men. And I'm glad you put a spotlight on Black men, because that is the group who is waking up from this, what I call Democrat plantation. Of, I don't know, 60 plus years of being on that plantation, and you look around and most Black communities are suffering while white progressive liberals continue to get what it is that they want by weaponizing the color of our skin. So yeah, I saw it when I ran. I saw it when I took Vivek into the South Side of Chicago, predominantly Black men. But here's the thing. I see Black people are, they're open to the idea of voting for someone other than a Democrat. I don't know if they're ready. Their primary diet is CNN, MSNBC, and their constant conversation is Republicans are racist and evil and trying to kill them. So the Republican Party has to do a far better job of actually going into these particular communities and having a dialogue. As of right now, you see the onesie twosies. I see Vivek. I see people like Donald Trump, but it has to be much more. Donald Trump is not going to be able to do what is necessary to win in November alone. It's going to take all of us at the grassroots level and up going into these communities and beginning to just have conversation with people. They are open to the conversation. We have to make them ready.
When someone says we begin this conversation about Donald Trump being a convicted felon,
I hate that. I find that to be racist and myopic. Black people are not special little unicorns. We want what you want. We are not stupid. Just because he's a felon does not make him more relatable. I don't know any felons in my life. And most of the people I interact with don't know any felons in our lives. Well, let me correct that. I do know one. But I'm sure most of us know that, too. Donald Trump would be one of them, right?
Right.
Now we know Donald Trump as a felon. But listen,
so you believe,
I find that to be myopic. And white Republicans, you got to get over that. And you got to stop looking at Black people like we're special little unicorns. We want what you want. We don't want these illegals being dumped into our neighborhoods, destroying our families, raping and killing our children. We don't want horrible schools. We don't want liquor stores on every street corner. So stop with that foolishness, because I find it to be small-minded and racist.
Judith Sherwin.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with, you know, Kathy, I don't know. We should probably spend a lot of time on the air with each other agreeing. Okay, because I agree with everything you say.
You'll be a guest on the podcast.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to. It is demeaning to Black people for people to say that. Absolutely. But I think all you need to do to see the appeal that Donald Trump has to, you know, non-white Republicans or non-white Americans, you know, he's looking for support from American citizens. All you had to do was listen to the Bronx rally last week and listen to the people in the Bronx. There was one guy, he said, look at it here. There's Blacks. It was a Black guy. He says, there's Blacks. There's whites. There's all kinds of good-looking women, Black and white. Kind of funny. But he says, this is like being at the Yankee game. We are all rooting for the same team. Okay.
Our country. We love our country.
Okay.
And Donald Trump is rooting for our country.
Is that message, you made the point we've kind of focused on, Black men. But again, what about Black women? I'm not seeing any narrative out there that Black women are gravitating to Donald Trump. So is that one of the big splits that's happening in politics? This is a situation where husbands and wives are not going to be canceling each other's votes, or are they?
I mean, well, I'm a black woman, and I'm certainly going to be voting for Donald Trump. Right. I wasn't always a Republican.
You
I
might,
used to be
but
a
Kathy, you are unique. You are unique. Would you acknowledge that you are unique?
No, she may not be. I know some other black
okay,
women.
Well, all right, well, okay. Let's not get into a mathematical battle.
I like to think I'm unique. Yes, right? I think all of us should think we're special. I certainly think I'm special. But at the same time, yes, there is a divide, right? You have a lot of black women who are going to these various very woke colleges, and they're spending a lot of time with white progressive women who are saying, girl, let me hear you roar. And they are, you know, and not only that, but they've been trained by from Lyndon B. Johnson and the Great Society idea fiasco that black women don't need black men. And that, you know, that the government will be your baby's daddy, that the government will pay your phone bill, your light bill, your food bill, buy you a coat, get you a car and all of those things. You don't really need a man. And most people, I think we have an economist on here, I'm sure you will agree, that most people get married due to a financial benefit. But when the government becomes your husband and tells you you don't need a man, we will do it for you, then yes, then you have that break in the family. But it was very intentional what Lyndon B. Johnson and these white progressives have done and decimating the black community, but now it's spilling out of the black community and over here in these suburbs.
Let's go to Mike Miller to comment on that. Mike, any part of that you want to tackle?
Wow is right.
Yeah. Sorry to say it quite that. No, you're exactly right, by the way. Marriage is the stabilizing factor in the lives of children, in the lives of the married couple. Marriage is so important, which I guess is why so many Democrats are against it. But there is the divide does exist that Mr. Trump does not appeal as much to women as he does to men.
Well, I don't know if that's...
And I think that's across all races. I'm not sure that that is in any way race specific. I think he is getting a lot of Hispanic men as well. And remember that Hispanics are now 14 or 15% of the population. Blacks are still 13%. So you could get a very large percent of Hispanic males and black males, and that would be more than enough to put Mr. Trump over the top.
Is it all about macho? Is it all about the Trump macho?
No, it's not macho. No. It's just... No, but it's about the border. It's about inflation. And there's some degree of pushing back against the man and the establishment. Yeah. And the establishment now is clearly the Democratic Party in general, and then some portions of the Republican Party. They're pushing back against establishment.
Let's go to Brian.
And
he's listening to us.
That appeals to them.
He's listening in the northwest suburbs of Chicago. Go ahead, Brian. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I wanted to mention, I volunteer at a food pantry, and I've been going there for probably 15 years plus. And one thing what's interesting is the amount of people going to the food pantry now is it's probably five times now compared to when Trump was in office. And you know, we try not to be political. We walk the people down the aisles, and they always say, "Thank God you're here. You're really helping us, and we're, you know, things are terrible."
Brian, do me a favor. Brian, I've got to interrupt you because we're going to a break. Stay on the line. I want to hear you finish your comment and question, but we'll do that when you have more time after this break. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks for joining us tonight on Beyond the Beltway.
This is Dennis Prager. Sign up today for an unforgettable experience in Israel this October. Mike Gallagher and I are traveling to the Holy Land on the Stand with Israel tour with our trusted partner, Inspiration Cruises and Tours. This trip of a lifetime to Israel is one you don't want to miss. Register today before it's too late at StandWithIsraelTour.com, StandWithIsraelTour.com, or call 855-565-5519, 855-565-5519.
I think it's just vapor.
Vaping is safer than smoking, isn't it?
There's really not even that much nicotine in them, right?
One vape pod has as much nicotine as one pack of cigarettes.
My kid knows it's dangerous.
5.4 million American kids vape, and most think it's harmless.
Get your head out of the cloud. Talk to your kid about vaping. Visit talkaboutvaping.org. That's talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Why was the basketball court all wet? Because the players kept dribbling on it.
The dad joke. Corny, groan-worthy, but also one of the simplest ways to share a moment with your kids.
What did the buffalo say when he dropped his son off for school?
Bye, son.
So take a moment to make your kid laugh, because dad jokes rule. Make your kid laugh today. Go to fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
What if the music stopped? If the familiar voices were silenced? If there were no breaking news updates? What if your companion and connection to your community came with a monthly fee? Don't worry, we're free local radio with you wherever you go. Celebrating 100 years and looking forward to the next 100. We are broadcasters. Text radio to 52886 and let Congress know you depend on your local TV and radio stations. This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Just about back, we continue with Beyond the Beltway. Brian is listening to us in northwest suburban Chicago, and he was right in the middle of telling his story and about to come to a question or a comment. Brian, go ahead.
Yeah, as I mentioned, I was at I volunteer at a food bank, and what I'm seeing is the anomaly where people have it so bad that they're willing to make a change, and they're going to vote for Trump. However, they are not going to tell anybody. They don't want that magma stigma attached to their name. I've heard that from numerous people, and even one family, their daughter's going to be voting for the first time, and she sees how hard their family's going through the hardship, so she's going to vote for Trump. And the second thing I want to bring up is regarding are you going to vote for a convicted felon? I was at breakfast at a senior center today with my mom, and what's interesting is the point they made was we're always being threatened with either Social Security being taken away. Now, are you going to vote for a felon? And the topic today was, hey, are you better than you were before? Are you feeling the pinch? And was it better under Trump or is it better under Biden? And it fueled a lively debate.
On Tuesday, stay on the line, Brian. On Tuesday of this week, the president is going to unveil his executive order vis-a-vis illegal immigration. There hasn't been a lot leaked on exactly what's going to happen, but a fear that some Republicans have is that Joe Biden at the 11th hour is going to come up with an idea, which he's going to be able to say makes him look like someone that's really fighting illegal immigration, even though the Republicans have dominated the issue for 3.5 years. Do you think that will work? I mean, if Joe Biden on Tuesday comes up with something that is at least partially reasonable, is he going to get a lot of credit for that, or do you think that's not something that the average voter is going to really give too much consideration to, Brian?
Here's where I stand. I'm an independent, and I'll be honest, I don't like either one of them, and I sat out the last election, okay. But I have to do something now because the country is going to heck. I don't like what put me over the top now back to Trump, and once again, I don't love him, but this fiasco of them trying to take over, if you can't beat them, put them in jail. That's it. That put me over. And I have a lot of friends that are same way as, hey, this is not right. And I don't care what Joe's going to do. He had 4 years. He hasn't done anything. And now to go after I wouldn't be surprised if they put Trump in jail just so he couldn't be on the campaign trail. And I've never donated to anybody, and I actually gave money to Trump after I heard the verdict.
Wow. Well, you're not the only one, sir.
You blew out all the phone lines. You blew out all the websites.
Yeah, they blew out the website. $52 million.
Yeah, that is amazing. Thanks very much, Brian, for your call. Mike Miller, to you, on the issue of the president's executive order, which is coming out Tuesday, is this something that he can get away with if he comes out with a executive order that looks halfway decent?
Oh, no. I think there's too much damage has been done. Right. He will, of course, say, well, look, I finally have done something. But you know what makes it so weird? He's going to do an executive order when he told us he couldn't do executive orders. There was nothing he could do unless Congress would give him more money and more power to do things. To me, he looks foolish. And the caller had mentioned about Trump. He wasn't a big fan. Many of us on the right are not exactly big fans of Mr. Trump personally. I mean, in terms of being a thin-skinned blowhard, that's what he is. But we really do like his policies, and that's why eventually we're gonna move towards him as opposed to somebody else.
The thing that has made this
trial so interesting to me is that it has given me one more reason why I cannot in any way support Mr. Biden. That I think he's behind this. I do, but think that he was pulling the strings, or somebody in his administration was pulling the strings with Bragg and so forth to make this happen. And I fear a man like that so much more than a man like Donald Trump.
Right, because Donald Trump wouldn't do that, didn't do that. All these people
wouldn't
who are
do that
would not.
Would
you
not.
Know? Look, Bruce,
would not.
Bruce,
there'll be no, just you're. I want to make sure I'm hearing.
Not.
There
I'm
will be no retaliation
not.
Of any kind.
There will be investigations.
Let me finish.
There will be investigations that will be done of certain things, and they absolutely should be done. This prosecution in New York was an absolute sham.
Okay,
it was. I hate to use the word. It's a conspiracy. They had no jurisdiction to do this.
You made that point.
Okay.
I want to go to.
I need to say one.
You made that point over and over again in the first thing.
One more sentence. Because you asked me a question.
I know.
Donald Trump was president for 4 years. He did not put anybody in jail who was his political opponent. He did not do any of the things that Joe Biden is doing. As a matter of fact, he was urged to go after Hillary Clinton, and he said, I'm not going to do it. There's been enough already.
Okay.
So I don't think he will
Kathy,
do it.
To you.
Yeah.
Do you think there will be some revenge?
Oh, absolutely. And we want it. And I'm here for all of it, right? Now, hopefully they follow the law when doing it, right? That would be far more gracious.
Well, that's different.
Than what we think
following the law is what we are allowed to do.
Let Kathy speak.
From the FBI, the DOJ, and what we just saw in New York. But I was saying earlier, people are coming to the realization of making a distinction between the devil they know, Biden, versus the devil of their imagination. Since 2016, Donald Trump has been built into this huge boogeyman. But they said Donald Trump is going to start World War III. No, actually, it's Biden. Donald Trump is going to destroy our democracy. No, actually, it's the Biden administration and the DOJ under the Biden administration that is weaponizing our laws to go after people they don't like or don't want to do away with. I think people are seeing that.
Okay, we've got a break. 1-800-723-8289. In case you tuned in late, our Democrats scheduled for tonight canceled earlier today. So again, we have no Democratic perspective. That's going to come in through phone calls and through email. I'm Bruce Dumont. Don't go away. Another full hour. And when we get into the next hour, we're going to be talking about Hunter Biden. He's got a trial coming up. It'll be in all the newspapers. Back shortly from Chicago. Bruce Dumont in Elk Grove Village, Illinois, just outside Chicago, beginning our second hour of our broadcast this evening. Mike Miller joins us from Western Washington University. Judith Sherwin sits right across the street, right across the table from me. And Kathy Barnett joins us from the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, making her first appearance. She was a grassroots supporter or supervisor of Vivek Ramaswamy's campaign for President of the United States. She's also very active in Republican politics in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, ran for the U.S. Senate, and has been carrying the water for Republicans, as everyone has tonight, because in case you just tuned in, our Democratic guest canceled early today, so we have no Democrat. I spent most of the day trying to get a Democrat here. So again, if we're a little one-sided tonight, that's the answer. I'm trying to be as best a devil's advocate as I can be. By the way, ABC and Ipsos have already come out with a poll. This was a poll taken on the verdict. This is on the verdict in the Trump trial. 50% of the people polled thought that it was correct. 27% said not correct. And 23% they said they did not know. And then also, in addition to that, they asked, were charges politically motivated? 47% of the people thought that it was politically motivated. 38% said no. And 15% said they don't know. Now, again, in the next 5 months, we have already been, I think, the most polled campaign in American presidential politics. And I think in the next 5 months, every other day, we're going to get a new poll, because everyone wants to be able to say that they had it right. As I've said on many occasions in the past, I think the presidential race is going to go down to about 5 to 7 states. And again, what happens in those 5 to 7 states is going to determine who wins and who loses. I think probably a voting block of probably less than 200,000, 300,000 people are going to decide who the next president of the United States is. And so I want to go back to our card-carrying strategist tonight. And because one of the states, obviously, that both sides are looking towards chopping their bit. In fact, Joe Biden spends more time in Pennsylvania. I was going to say more time than Delaware, but no, that's not true. But he spends a lot of time in Pennsylvania. He knows how important it is. So, Kathy, give us the lay of the land again. Put your objective observer's hat on, if you can, and give us the real skivvy as to what's happening in Pennsylvania right now.
Yeah, you know, you and I had spoke a little bit about it before we went on air earlier about this apathy, you know, and I saw this not only here in Pennsylvania, but across the nation when I was traveling with Vivek in Iowa, of all places. The apathy among our voters, is even here in Pennsylvania, is real. And I'm not convinced that the Republican Party appreciates just how debilitating that apathy is going to be. I think many of them believe, you know, we build it, they will come. And I'm not sure that that's the case. People are really struggling. Some of those people are struggling so much, as one of your previous caller has said, it is motivating him to go to the polls and to vote in a manner in which he wasn't intending to. But I've seen firsthand that that apathy can also be very paralyzing. And so I see that. And so to the Republican Party, we need to do a much better job of activating our base. As I speak today, there is no Trump campaign office here in the state of Pennsylvania. This is a very competitive swing state in the mix of things. There are 19 electoral college votes, and there's no grassroots. You can drive up and down all across the state. You would be hard pressed to find a Trump sign even. Now, that does not speak to the base of people like myself. We are determined. We're ready. We're wanting to be engaged. But what I'm noticing is that the Republican Party is not spending all that money to engage its base. And so we need to do a much better job in doing that.
Kathy, are you confident that when someone makes a donation to the Trump campaign or makes a donation to the Republican Party, whether it's in Pennsylvania, Illinois, or to the national party, are you confident that any of that money is getting down to the grassroots, or is a substantial portion of it going to pay for Donald Trump's legal fees?
I don't know. I'm going to allow the lawyer on the panel to talk about that. I have no idea, but I do know that
is that a concern that you share though? I mean, I've heard
it
other
is,
people say that. Yeah.
Yes.
Mostly Democrats.
It is a concern. No. Even for me, because listen, although I want Donald Trump to win, and although I believe this, you know, like this weaponization of our legal system is wrong, flat out wrong. I think I've expressed that very clearly. Yeah. My number one priority is not necessarily Donald Trump. My number one priority is to my family and to my country. And we've actually lost so much of our country right now. And right now, all of our eggs are in the basket labeled Trump. And so to that extent, I want Donald Trump to get across that finish line come November. And I want him to be victorious. And so all of my effort is on how do we win? How do we motivate our base? How do we go outside of our base and start talking to people who traditionally don't vote Republican? I think that's where a large amount of our energy and effort must be. And I applaud Donald Trump for what he has done up to this point. It's been very difficult to have a hand handcuffed behind you and to go out here and to try to campaign. But at the same time, November is approaching, and our nation is going to take a very definitive pivot one way or the other. My interest is solely in preserving my family and this country, and the country that allowed a little black girl to be able to claw her way out of dire poverty. I want to preserve that America for the next little girl or boy who find themselves underneath a rock.
Mike Miller, do you see that this election is as definitive as Kathy has said? I mean, every 4 years, someone is saying this is the most important election we've ever had. I think both sides are sort of saying it now. Do you buy that? Is this more important than every election you can think of in your life?
I believe the answer is yes, but the thing is, I don't believe it's because of Mr. Trump. I think if Mr. Trump then serves for 4 years the way he did his first 4 years, things will be fine. The problem is, if Mr. Biden gets in, the man has dementia. There's simply no doubt in my mind he cannot run the presidency, and someone's pulling the strings behind him. Mm-hmm. And then when he has to step down, because there's no way he can last another 4 years, we're going to get President Harris, and that absolutely frightens me. And so I think in terms of, is this an important thing? I think that Biden is really the one that should scare Americans. It is not necessarily Trump.
I agree.
I give it to the Democrats for making it, you know, that, oh, he's this evil, he's Hitler. It's preposterous. We've already seen 4 years of him.
Right. We know exactly who Donald Trump is. He's been president for four years.
Yes.
And you know, I agree. This is a pivotal election. We are going one way or the other way. And it's not about Donald Trump. He's a symbol of being able to save the country.
Okay. We've got to pause. 1-800-723-8029. When we come back, I want to spend some time talking about Kamala Harris. She is a heartbeat away now. She will be a heartbeat away for the next 4 years if Joe Biden is elected. Let's talk about her when we come back. I'm Bruce Dumoulin.
As a local business owner, you get called every week by marketing companies. We get it. We have hundreds of satisfied customers. Here's what a satisfied client recently said.
Open enrollment is going great. We're hitting record numbers. Thank you so much for this report. It really is amazing to see how the marketing is really shaping our enrollment around the city.
If you're a local business and ready for the next step, visit surroundchicago.com right now. Our experts are ready to help you take your marketing to the next level. Visit surroundchicago.com today.
In the new video series, Fault Lines, Professor Vodi Bonkam examines the threat of woke social doctrine versus biblical justice.
The religion of anti-racism has no redemption. We have to be right about what God requires in this critical moment.
Discover the fault lines beneath today's cultural divide.
What God are you trying to appease?
Fault Lines, the 10-part video series and essential 6-part study guide. Available at salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Bruce Dumont back, and we're going to head to calls. We're going to go to Stephen in Knoxville, Tennessee, listening to Beyond the Beltway this evening in the Volunteer State. Go ahead.
Hi, Bruce. And I just want to say, like, you being the moderator for the Democratic side, I certainly appreciate it.
Thank you.
But thank you. What's interesting to me from the Republican side is I'm not really hearing what policy initiatives there are. Like, as a Democrat in the state of Tennessee, which is a very red state, there are times that I vote for Republicans because they have some good policies to where the Democratic candidate doesn't put forth policies. The issue that I have with Trump, outside of the criminal trials, outside of his popularity from a certain standpoint and a certain group of MAGA Republicans, is I don't know what his policies are. He hasn't put forth what the Republican platform as a whole is going to be if he's elected for the next 4 years. And that's interesting to me because it seems like he's more intent on running on the popularity contest side rather than on a policy to see what Americans
can
want.
Can I take this?
Well, I'm going to let our two Republicans tackle that first. So stay on the line, Stephen. We're going to Judith first. Give us the short version of the policies that you think he's going to do.
Okay, so number one, he's going to try to prevent World War III. That's number one.
How about that?
And he's got a pretty good track record of
how
managing.
How does he do that?
You know, he was real good at managing the world and the crisis. When he came into office, Obama said you were going to be in a nuclear war with yes. North Korea in 6 months. I missed it. We weren't in a nuclear war. As
it
a
didn't
matter
happen.
Of fact,
yeah.
He was quiet as a mouse. Okay, that's number one. Number two, he's going to get this economy moving again. Okay, it is not moving.
How does he do that?
Well, the very simple way he does that, and he's talked about this over and over again, and you really ought to listen to the rallies sometimes. He is going to start drilling for oil again. You know, when you cut off oil, not only do you cut off oil production, you cut off a whole bunch of other things that takes the economy and puts
Stop
it in the garbage
second.
Can.
I'm going to turn to our economist now to offer your assessment on what Trump is likely to do if he's elected as it relates just to the economy and the issue of drilling, sure. as Judy brought up, and then we're going to go back to Kathy. Go ahead, Mike.
I have a
we'll come back to you, Stephen, as well. Go ahead.
He's definitely going to drill more, make it more possible, because Mr. Biden has gotten in the way. We need an energy policy that includes everything, renewables along with fossil fuels, for the next 30 years at least. The most important thing that Mr. Trump has proposed and he can do is to do something about regulations. The amount of regulations that have been put on small businesses and even large businesses has been quite substantial. Just by making sure that any regulation meets a cost-benefit analysis and that the benefits that we get are greater than the cost would be a major breakthrough for the government to do that. He was doing it under his administration, and that was stopped under Mr. Biden.
Stop for a second.
There's a good chance that Mr. Yes.
Stop for a second.
I want to try to impose.
I want to go to Kathy, then we'll be back to you. I also want to bring Stephen back into the conversation.
I have a couple of other
questions. But you're going to have to wait for Stephen.
I will.
Kathy, go ahead.
Judith, you're right. The list is long. The only reason why the caller perhaps don't know anything about Trump's policies is because he hasn't been paying attention. It's very obvious. Putting side by side the just position of Trump, term 4 years in office, and now Biden. When Biden inherited this the presidency from, or when it was transitioned from Donald Trump to Biden, Donald Trump handed Biden an inflation of what was it, 1.2%, and now look at what
1.
We're contending
4.
With
1.4%,
right? And now look at what we're contending with. Gas prices went as low as $1.88, but most importantly for me, as a mother, my little boys were not out here chemically being castrated. Little girls were not out here cutting off healthy breasts and getting full hysterectomy when Trump was in office. All of that foolishness.
Does that go to the presidency?
It goes to federal policy. There's a federal policy allowing for that.
One of the things Donald Trump has said he will do, picking it up from Vivek Ramaswamy, is to shut down the Department of Education.
Right.
Also, we did not have what they say 10 million illegals. It really looks more like 30 million because no one really knows what the real answer is.
Okay, folks, let me stop you. Let me stop the Republicans. I know you can, but I'm trying. We have an identified Democrat calling from Knoxville, Tennessee, and I want to go back. Stephen, did our Republicans give you any specifics on the issues that you asked? Where there clearly is a difference between what Joe Biden would do and what Donald Trump would do in many cases based on what he has done already. So do you see some of the separation that you've asked for?
Yeah, so I will say this. From their perspective, they gave me a lot of their feelings. I understand how you feel about the country. But what I wanted to drill down on specific. So if we look at the oil market, because that was brought up about Trump drilling more.
Mm-hmm.
Oil is ran by private corporations. It's not ran by the U.S. government. Biden has told.
No, but that's not true.
Can we let the Democrats speak, folks?
Yeah.
Let's let the Democrats speak.
You have all of this federal land that you have access to drill on. Republicans in Congress called the oil executives in for a hearing and said, we gave you all of this land to drill on. Why are you not drilling?
Because they can't get permits from the federal government. That's why.
Do you know who BlackRock is? Do you know who BlackRock is? I would encourage you to spend some time understanding who BlackRock is, one of the largest
Let me stop for a second. Hold it. Everybody back to your corners. I want to yield to our economist on the program this evening to respond to your point, Stephen. Because you've challenged what was something that Mike said. So, Mike, go back to you. Can you address further Mr. Stephen's response or Stephen's response?
Yeah, as mentioned, the issue here has to do with not just the land on which you can drill, but you must be given a permit to do the drilling. And there's also a fundamental hesitancy to use a method called fracking within the Democrats. The Republicans endorse fracking. It's something that has been around since the 1940s, and it is one of the most efficient ways to get oil and gas out of the ground. Right. Another one would be to endorse the use of much more natural gas, for which we have 250 years worth of natural gas underneath Canada and the United States. But the idea that we would get rid of stoves and so forth and gas furnaces within the United States, which is what Biden would love to do, all of these things are preposterous. So Mr. Trump, I believe, is on the right side here. You must have a very balanced energy policy. And when somebody says, here's some land to drill on, you have to give them a permission to do so.
Right.
You need to get rid of all
also,
the red tape so that people can actually drill.
Right. As we look for a defining moment, and again, this is for Stephen and everybody else. Is it safe to say that one of the big differences is if you want electric vehicles, you're going to vote for Biden? If you don't like the concept of electric vehicles and don't think there's been enough planning for the electrifying of units all over the country, you're going to vote for Trump because he will slow it down. Biden will speed it up. Is that a fair assessment of where
no,
those
it's
there?
No, it's not, actually.
I was
really
not.
One at a time.
Moment.
Go ahead.
I do not believe that's a definitive moment. Right now, Pete Buttigieg is being dragged all right. across national television because our government has given him over $7 billion in order to build out an electric vehicle gassing station, whatever it is. Yeah, grid. And we only have two of them up and running, right? After 4 years and $7 billion later, right. No, the defining moment is so much, whether it's the weaponization of our legal system.
No, wait a minute. Kathy, I want to focus on the question that Stephen brought up. In just a second, can I ask my question, or would you prefer to answer it first?
Well, I think right, I know.
Let me ask it. The question is, we have an economist here who's made a point. I asked a simple question. Electric vehicles, are you for them or against them? One candidate is going to move through hell and high water to give us electric vehicles. The other is going to slow the process down.
Not true. That's not what he has said.
What has he said?
He has said, if you want an electric vehicle, go ahead and buy one. If you want a gas-powered vehicle, go ahead and buy one of those. I'm not going to impose a mandate on you. Electric vehicles are made in China. If we're going to make them, we're going to make them here, not in China. And we're going to make them based on the market's demand.
Judith, one candidate is going to say go, go, go. And the other one's going to say slow, slow, slow.
That's not slow. You're not listening, Bruce.
Stephen.
One is going to say mandate, mandate, mandate. Okay. The other one is going to say go where the market leads you.
Right. Thank
Stephen,
you.
There you go. Stephen, in Knoxville, Tennessee, have we answered your questions or tried to?
I would say it's a possibility, but let me explain.
Good.
Let me explain from a Democratic point. Because here's the issue overall.
Just one second. You want to make a closing comment. We're about to go to a break.
Yes.
I want to give you an opportunity to make that closing comment without interruptions. We'll do that when we come back. I'm Bruce Dumont.
Okay.
Video series Fault Lines, Professor Vody Bauckham examines the threat of woke social doctrine versus biblical justice.
The religion of anti-racism has no redemption. We have to be right about what God requires in this critical moment.
Discover the fault lines beneath today's cultural divide.
What God are you trying to appease?
Fault Lines, the 10-part video series and essential 6-part study guide. Available at salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.
I love this song!
I love nachos.
Loving everything? You might be buzzed.
You know what I'd love? A ride when it's time to head out.
If you see a buzz warning sign, call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball!
Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and Ad Council.
Bruce Dumont back, and we continue with Beyond the Beltway. And before the break, Stephen is listening to us in Knoxville, Tennessee, identified as a Democrat. He called in, and which I appreciate, because we're looking for Democrats to participate this evening, because our card-carrying Democrat who was to be in studio stood me up today. So, Stephen, you wanted to make a closing comment, and then we're going to move on, but go ahead. Stephen, are you there? Are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, can you?
Yeah, we're good. Go ahead.
To your Republican co-host, I watch you guys every week, and I respect all of you. I just want to say that in the outset. The part that gets me for the Republican Party is it is very heavy on social issues. And I get that because it affects your day-to-day. But from a policy perspective, when I look at Democrats versus Republicans, Democrats get more done in Congress. Even things that I may not agree with for their direction for the country, I can at least say when they're in power, they can govern. When Republicans are in power, they struggle to govern. And that bears out in the numbers. And I think if we get to a place to where the Republican Party can come more off social issues, some of them are important, but if they can come more off social issues and get back to direct policy disputes, the country would be much better off, because then we can have a battle of ideas and not a battle of how you feel. Because that's where I'm at as a Democrat in my life, at 36 years old. I care more about what the policy is as a 36-year-old than what you feel about it. Because at the end of the day, that's what matters. Policy is what makes changes in the country. You saying that you want the border closed, you can say that. But from a legal perspective, unless there is a state of emergency for the entire United States, which the current border issue very well is, I agree with that premise, but you have to come up with policy solutions to fix it.
Okay. We're going to let everybody respond. We're going to Kathy, Judith, and Mike. I want all of you to respond.
Who goes first?
Starting with Kathy. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. You keep saying emotion, talking about the border and the fact that we need to secure the border is not an emotional talking point. That is very real. Our border is wide open. And when you talk about policies, let's talk about remain in Mexico. Let's talk about build a border wall. Those are very specific policies. Let's talk about you cannot, Donald Trump, I forgot the name of what it is, but when someone is coming to the United States, they cannot go through three different countries where they were safe and then get to America
remain
and
in
claim
Mexico.
Asylum.
Remain yes. in Mexico.
Well, remain, or the first or the first,
first
country
safe
that
country.
First country you come to.
First
yes,
safe
yes,
country.
The first yeah. safe country. Those were very specific policies that under the Donald Trump administration, we had the lowest illegal border crossing ever. That's not emotion. That is real. The other last point is about ESG. That is something that has been forced down our throat from Democrats. That is not emotion because those three letters have shown up in every single aspect. And I was mentioning earlier about BlackRock and Larry Fink. They manage the largest amount of assets in the world, over $22 trillion. The U.S. GDP is only $20 trillion. So this these three big companies who manage money, they manage more money than the U.S. economy. They literally went into Exxon. They own 21% of Exxon's share. They went into Exxon and they forced three board members to be booted. And then they replaced those three board members with climate change activists who immediately went about okay. the business of destroying drilling and fracking. So again, okay. these are not emotions. These are facts.
Kathy, thank you. Let's go to Judith and then Mike.
Okay. So the first thing that you have to sort of take into account, the Republicans are never a monolith. The Democrats tend to be a monolith. They vote together no matter what. And the Republicans don't do that. When Donald Trump had his first 2 years in office, he had a very difficult situation with Mr. Ryan, who didn't want to go along with anything that Trump wanted to do except the tax cut. And you'll see that he got that. But Trump got a lot of other things out of the Congress, and even got a lot of other things out of the Congress when he didn't have the majority. But right now, this Congress is basically leaderless, okay? The House of Representatives has a 1 or 2 point majority. Mike Johnson is perhaps the weakest Republican leader I think we've ever seen.
You do differently?
What would I do?
Given the mathematics.
That's what I'm saying. Given the mathematics of what he has and the reality of what he's got to deal with in the Senate, which God knows they can't wait. They can't wait to jump on a Democrat bill, okay, and vote for it over there. I mean, you've got some people over there. I don't even know why they call themselves Republicans. But this is a problem. You don't have any real Republicans, or you have some, but you don't have enough, okay? And so that's very hard to govern that
Let's
way.
Go to Mike Miller, summarizing this.
No, I did not think it was terribly emotional either. I thought I was straightforward with my the policy things I mentioned. And if I this, don't take this as a negative, the BlackRock might be $22 trillion, but the U.S. economy is $28 trillion. In nominal terms, unadjusted for inflation. It's $20 trillion when you adjust it for inflation. So the economy is bigger than what BlackRock controls, but BlackRock controls an enormous amount of
right.
money. So Mike, you are correct on that point.
When you're on this program the first Sunday of every month, we ask you to step back, put your professorial hat on, and give us an assessment of the latest numbers released by the federal government as it relates to the economy. So I ask you to do that now.
Yeah, the only number, interesting number that has come out very recently, just last week, was more information on inflation, and it was an unfortunate number in that the inflation is going sideways. Since June of last year, we've kind of hit a bottom, and inflation just will not fall. And we're not seeing major increases in people's wages sufficient to offset that increase in prices. And so the reason Americans are so upset, more than 60% of Americans think we are in recession, when technically we are not in recession because we have GDP growing and unemployment is near full employment. But what has really, really hurt Americans, and I'm still not convinced that Joe Biden understands this, is that their wages are not keeping up with inflation, right, and it's not getting better. And then when you add to that very high interest rates on their credit cards, which are pretty much at the highest rate of terms of how much Americans owe, it's really hard to buy a house because of the very high mortgage rates. And we're seeing that auto loans are beginning to default much more than they were before. The kitchen table things that Americans talk about, and I've mentioned this in previous shows, they're just not getting better. And as we get into the summer, there's some evidence that, in fact, that inflation, if it has any direction to go, it's going to be a little bit more up as opposed to down, right, because of commodity prices, the underlying strategic commodities that go into production. And so if I were Mr. Biden, I would be worried that if it's the economy, stupid, I don't think the economy is going to be in the strong shape that he thinks that it is. And he can't try to tell us we're the ones who were wrong. The American people know what's happening at the kitchen table, and
Mike,
it's not good.
A question, a last question to you on this subject. If Donald Trump is elected in November, how soon will the average voter see some adjustment, positively or negatively, in their local economy of their home and individual operations?
It'll take time. It'll take time to get more energy on
weeks,
the ground, which
months,
would lower the price
years.
Of energy. Months, at least
yeah.
6 months, maybe almost to a year. He has to change the fundamental thinking regarding regulation. He will have to undo some of the regulations that Mr. Biden put in place where the costs greatly outweigh the benefits. That takes time, and he is going to need a Congress that can work with him. And I'm afraid, of course, that the Democrats will not work with the man at all. So if we have at least one House and close on the second, we can then Mr. Trump will be able to operate. But it's going to be a tough row. And he doesn't, of course, control the Federal Reserve, though he will get to replace the head of the Fed if
right.
he so desires
right.
fairly early in his term. He could get rid of Jay Powell if he wants. And put in somebody else if he thinks they would be a better leader at the Federal Reserve.
Is regaining control of the U.S. Senate the most important thing that's out there above and beyond the presidential race? Is it more important?
Well, in my mind, the Senate controls the appointments,
right,
I think, are
right.
so important, including
the
Supreme Court.
The courts.
So
very important.
I think it's extremely important. Even if Mr. Trump loses, controlling the Senate would be a major coup for the Republicans.
Mm-hmm. And I want to come back. Give us a quick response as to where you think the Senate race is in Pennsylvania between Mr. McCormick and Mr. Casey, the incumbent. Kathy?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a hard row. I think Dave is doing what most people would expect him to do right now, Dave McCormick. I am, however, looking at Utah, Trent Staggs. I'm really liking him. I'm also looking at Ohio, Bernie Moreno will win, but it would be really close. I think Carrie Lake in Arizona has a chance, but I'm talking to a lot of grassroots people there, and it's going to be very difficult. It is, kind of lackluster there as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, when we come back, I want to look ahead, spend the last segment looking ahead. First of all, I want to talk briefly about the Israeli-Gaza war and President Biden's efforts to offer a peace solution there. And we'll talk about that and Bibi Netanyahu's visit to Congress coming up. I'm Bruce Dumont. Don't go away.
I just need you to listen to me.
I know that a lot of times, Mom, it might not seem like I'm listening to you, but I am. I hear you. And what you say really does matter to me.
I mean, let's be honest. No kid likes rules, but I get why we have them. I hear you, and I know it's because you care.
All the talks we've had over the years, including what you've told me about not using alcohol and other drugs, they stick with me. And believe it or not, they really do make a difference, especially at times that matter most.
Hey, want a drink?
No, thanks, I'm good. So thank you, Dad, for talking and preparing me for what's ahead.
Thanks, Mom, for never giving up and always being my biggest fan.
Thank you for letting me know what you expect, so I can try to meet your expectations.
Thank you for talking.
For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober.
Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
President Biden has offered a peace proposal for the Israeli-Gaza war. There's been various reports. Most have suggested that Israel is going to accept it. Bibi Netanyahu has accepted an invitation to come and address Congress in the next couple of weeks. And so, Judith Sherwin, my question to you is, does this show that Joe Biden at least is making a very strong effort to bring some peace to Israel?
I don't know what he's doing. I think it shows he's making a very strong effort to try to win Michigan and Minnesota. His peace proposal would be practically a suicide pact for Israel.
Why is it you think Israel would accept it then?
They didn't accept it. Okay, well, so I know
report. There's a published report.
There's a published report that says he did. I have listened to Netanyahu in Hebrew, okay, and he has not accepted it. What he has said is we are not going to stop until we destroy Hamas. And quite frankly, this is something he's not just doing for Israel. He's doing it for us. These are terrorists. These people showed you who they are. They have no respect. They want to destroy the West.
Right.
Okay, he's fighting it, and he's going to stop until he's satisfied that he has, or his ability to do it, is destroying
Hamas. Does the president, Kathy, get some credit in trying to resolve this matter?
No, absolutely not.
Why not?
And even from what I've read in the various many articles that I've read regarding this particular potential peace deal, I agree with you, Judith, is that it is something that Israel put forward. It wasn't Biden who put it forward, and now it is in Hamas's court and they are expecting Hamas to agree to it. They're also, and if Hamas agrees to it, since Israel essentially wrote it, then the assumption is Israel will agree to it. This is what I have been able to ascertain from the various reports that I've read. It's a three-part peace agreement. And Benjamin Netanyahu has been very clear that even as they carry out phase one of this three-stage peace agreement, they will continue to beat Hamas down. And I absolutely agree with it. Hamas opened up a can of whoop, you know what, and now they're getting their behinds whooped. And so I agree with Israel to continue doing exactly what it is that they're doing, and it appears that they will. A two-state solution is suicidal.
Right.
And I think any reasonable individual who understands these people still have in their charter that they want to annihilate Israel. And so you cannot go to the table trying to have a meaningful conversation with people who have shown you that they want to destroy you. And in the manner in which they did it on October 7th was barbaric. These are barbarians.
Okay. Mike Miller, I want to let Mike Miller, I want you to respond to where you think the Israeli-Gaza issue is going to be come November. Is this going to be still a hot button issue on the front burner, or do you think between now and then the Biden administration, with help from Congress, is going to move this thing along so there is some form of ceasefire?
I don't believe for a second that this is necessarily a call that we can make as the United States. This is between Israel and the monsters in Hamas.
Right.
And there's two things that absolutely have to be in any kind of ceasefire. That is the immediate release of all of the hostages, which holding hostages is a war crime. And the second thing is the understanding that all Hamas must leave Gaza, and they must leave control of what you would call the Palestinian people. And without those two things, Israel has no reason why they would ever agree to a ceasefire.
Why would they do? Why would Hamas do that? Why would Hamas do that?
They won't.
They won't
do that.
They won't.
The Palestinian Authority leader Abbas, he said himself that Hamas is not an alien group that fell from Mars. He said Hamas is an integral part of the Palestinian people.
That's exactly
right. Right before October 7th, when we saw the unfolding of evil in front of us, there was a survey that was taken by the Palestinian Center for Policy and Survey Research. 58% of Palestinians said they would vote for the leader of Hamas, Ishmael, if elections were held. And the Palestinian Authority, they have not had an election since 2005. They tried to have one in 2016. It was canceled because the Palestinian people want Hamas. And so therefore, to your point, to the economist on the panel, a peace agreement will never occur because the Palestinians are not a far cry from Hamas themselves. Not my words, but from their own leaders'
words. So we have two sides who are out to destroy the other side.
Yes, you
now, my
do.
Question,
you've got to accept that.
But only one
peace here.
One quick. Mike, last word to you.
But only one was attacked. I mean, could they live in peace? You know, the old saying that goes back several decades, if Israel put down its arms today, there would be no Israel tomorrow. If the Hamas put down its arms today, there would be peace tomorrow.
Right. That's right.
The Israelis do not want to destroy these people. They want to be left in peace. Hamas wants to destroy not just the state of Israel, but they also want to destroy all Jews, from what I understand.
Does Israel want to control Gaza?
No.
No, of course not. It's ungovernable. Of course not. That's why they gave it up.
Right. That's why Sharon gave it back to them.
If I could have a magic wand, my magic wand would be for Israel to simply declare, here are our borders, end of discussion, you touch us, we kill you.
If I were to wave my magic wand, I want Democrats on the show so they can fight their own battles next week and not rely on me to fight the battle for them. Mike Miller from Western Washington University, thank you very much for joining us, an economist, here on the first Sunday of every month. Judith Sherwin joins us. She is a veteran attorney, Republican conservative. And Kathy Barnett joins us from the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And she has the Kathy Barnett podcast. She also ran operations for Vivek Ramaswamy's presidential campaign. She's an author and well-known throughout the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, making her first appearance on our program this evening. Thanks to all of our guests, and also Fritz Goldman helped make this program possible. Until next week, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.